that, I'd like to introduce our speaker, Jack C. He's come down from Pennsylvania. Let's give him a warm welcome.
Hi, family. I'm an addict. My name's Jack. By God's grace and Narcotics Anonymous, I had a miracle happen to me today I didn't have to use. When I think about what Narcotics Anonymous means to me, I get the chills. I still get the chills when I think about walking into a room full of addicts. I'm going to qualify myself. I grew up in a housing project called the Tasker Homes in Philadelphia. I started shooting dope when I was 11 years old. And 21 years later, I found Narcotics Anonymous, or it found me. Where I lived, what I did was common. You know, I remember the first time I was outside of the project, I was about 14 years old. We were in the suburbs, and there was a house with grass. You know, and I remember thinking to myself, wow, these people must be millionaires, you know. On the way down here, I was reminded, because I don't know how the rest of you guys are, but I always have a little movie that's playing in my head. I might be one of the most dangerous people in the world behind the wheel of a car, because a lot of times I don't know how I got where I got. And I haven't used in quite a long time. I remember at the end how desperate I felt. And this guy scooped me up and he said, we're going to take you to a treatment center. Now, I don't know about anybody else, but I had never been introduced to recovery ever. You know, and they took me to this place, and my father was a criminal. Some of the things from my past I can talk about now because he's gone. I couldn't talk about his life when he was alive because it wouldn't have been fair to him. He probably would have gone to jail for some of the things that I would have shared. And I was in detox for 39 days. I weighed considerably less than I do now. I was about 130 pounds. And in order for me to survive, I started taking book while I was in the detox. People were gambling through me, through my father. And I thought that was okay. I thought it was okay because I really didn't understand life outside of that, you know. What I remember growing up, like the things that I remember growing up aren't with the normal childhood stuff. I remember my father shot a guy in my kitchen and screaming at me and my brother to hold his leg so he didn't get out the door before he could come up and pump a couple more into him. And then we went back to playing Monopoly. You know, that's the kind of insanity that I grew up in. And, you know, so I was waiting for all that kind of behavior when I got clean. I thought, well, everybody's going to be like that. You know, and then when I went into this treatment center, they suggested that I go somewhere else because I wasn't welcome there anymore. And they sent me to another facility. And my first day in treatment in that place, I had a woman counselor, and she sat directly across from me with a dress on. So I slapped as far down into the chair as I could. You know, I had no idea what I was expected to do. You know, all I knew is she had a dress on. And I'm like trying to get a picture, you know. And she said, excuse me, can I help you? And I said, yeah, cross your legs. I'm a sick guy. You know, I didn't know any better. And she said, you're in treatment, and I'm your counselor, and that's inappropriate. Why don't we discuss why you're so uncomfortable with yourself that you need to do these kinds of things? And pretty much that's how it's been for me ever since. I've been fortunate enough that I've had a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor since the day I got clean. When I left that treatment center, they graded you out. I got a zero. I got more time than that counselor now. So, you know, we don't know who's going to get this. They don't know who's going to get this. There's no guarantees here. The only guarantee I'll make is that if you do the things that you're supposed to do, you'll stay clean. If you don't, you're in for a ride. And it ain't going to be fun. You know, when I first got clean, I was like all over the place. And I used to think that the older guys in the fellowship had trick questions. You know, because I remember telling my sponsor, I was like 6 months clean. I said, dude, I think I'm ready to start dating. You know. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm ready. You know, we got to find a woman. You know, it's been a couple of years, and I need to have some kind of relationship with somebody. And he said, well, tell me what the difference between love and lust is. And I remember thinking, well, what the hell kind of question is that to ask somebody? They're one and the same, aren't they? He said, look it up, write them down, come back and tell me what the difference is. Well, the difference is lust has to do with power, control, and manipulation. And if you have those three ingredients in a relationship, a lot of bad things are going to happen. It's going to be sick. It might not work. And worse than that, somebody's going to use. So I said to him, dude, I might not ever be in a relationship because that's my way of life. That's what I understand. I don't know how to surrender. I didn't have a first step in my life yet. You know, how am I going to surrender and be in a relationship where we share? I didn't get that, you know. And along the way, I wrote on why I used, and some things started to make sense to me, you know. The reason I felt like I needed to be in control of relationships is because I had no self-esteem, so I would steal yours. That's how I did it. You know, I had a poor outlook on life, so I would take yours. If you had a dream, it was mine. I didn't have any. I didn't have any, you know. So the first time I met a healthy woman in this fellowship, I had been clean 3 years. And I was afraid for her. Really. I was afraid for her. I was thinking, man, she has no idea what she's dealing with. I am out of my mind. And I went to my sponsor and said, dude, I ain't ready for this. He said, 3 years ago, you were ready. Now you're 3.5 years clean, you ain't ready. I said, well, I'm working on my fifth step here, and trust me, bro, I am not ready for this. I'm looking at a person whose only relationship has been with himself. And he says, you know, when you're working on your fifth step, it's okay to look back. You're not supposed to stare. And I asked him, well, how do you not do that? He says, because that was you. This is you. Believe what you're doing. You know, it's one thing for us to do step work, but it's another to believe that we are becoming that person. I didn't think I was good enough for this woman. That's really what it came down to. And again, what resurfaced while I was doing that work was my low self-esteem. There's just no way I'm good enough for this person. Well, we've been married 17 years. And I participate in my relationship. I'm a good husband. I'm a good husband because I'm a better member of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, relating to people here was difficult for me. You know, a little later on, I'm going to talk about my child. Because I had never seen past the end of my nose. I only knew what made me feel good. Food, drugs, sex, money. That's what made me feel good. And I didn't have much of any of that at that point in my recovery. I was broke. I hated being broke. Stealing looked appealing. You know, I remember telling my sponsor there was a very large group in our area that they needed a treasurer. Yeah, they needed a treasurer bad. You know, 8 months later, I owed them a lot of money, and I paid it back. You know, One of the things about humility that we find out in here, that there's a fine line between humility and humiliation. A humble person doesn't think less of themselves. They think of themselves less often. And I had a long way to go. And I remember thinking that in order to make the sacrifices that we need to make in our early recovery so that as we move along and things get better, we appreciate them, you know. Again, like I said, I was a sick person. When I came in here, I didn't have anything. I was 5 years clean before I had a license that had my name on it. I was 6 years clean before I had a car with insurance. So it was a slow process. And you guys were very patient. In the interim, I meet this woman, and I'm going through all these feelings because I'm thinking at some point she's going to talk to my ex-wife because I have children with this woman, and she's going to say, he is a scumbag. Let me tell you the things that he did to me when we were married. You know, I got to tell you the truth. My biggest fear was that she was going to get clean and come in and say, oh, he didn't tell you about this? Or when he did that? Or when I had to do this so he could get his drugs? You know? And then I was able to share those things in a meeting and take that power away. Yeah, take that power away. Look, I wasn't proud of the fact that I had my wife have sex with the guy I cop from so I got a better deal. It was the one thing that was keeping me sick for about 5 years. No man wants to admit that he had sunken so low that he was willing to give up his woman for his need. Yeah, I was the guy who took his kid's birthday money. Yeah, that was me. I was the guy who walked out with the bike after putting it together all night, you know. And to be here now and to tell you that I am grateful for my past because it makes me appreciate my present and look forward to my future, that's some shit. That's some shit. And we've done horrible things to people, but guess what? Once it's shared, it's somebody else's problem. You know, that's what a fifth step did for me. It allowed me to release the demons of my past so that when I walked in a room, I didn't have to walk in with my head down hoping that no one would notice me. That's how I felt the first 3-4 years I was clean. I still didn't want to be noticed, just like I was when I was on the street when a cop was by. You know. That's how I was. So I walk in here. I wasn't much different. I wasn't taking anybody's inventory. I didn't care what they were doing. I just didn't want to be noticed. So doing my 6th and 7th step, my real character is revealed to me, and I'm afraid of it because it's soft. It's forgiving. And quite honestly, I was afraid if I was that person, I'd have no future because that person wasn't lustful in the sense that I didn't need to control and manipulate people. You know, I wanted the same things. I wanted to be rich, trust me. I still wanted to be rich. I wanted a nice house, wanted a nice car. I wanted not to feel like the guy who was living in the back room of my brother's house on a mattress, 33 years old, with nothing. No matter how long I was clean those first couple of years, I still felt like the guy who was in the back room of my brother's house on the mattress. And when the 6th and 7th step kicked in, shit changed. Now, look, I don't care how long you clean. If something comes into your mind and it's insane, guess what? It's a visitor. That's all it is. I was 7 years clean. I was married to the woman that I'm married to now, and we were driving down State Road up in the suburbs of Philadelphia. And my wife said to me, I started laughing. You know how we, oh, Jesus, when you think of some of the shit that you think, and I started laughing. And she said, what's so funny? Now, my wife's a therapist, so I said to her, well, I don't think you want to know. It's pretty crazy. And she says to me, relationships are built on trust and commitment and sharing. I said, okay, I was wondering if I kicked you out of the car while it was moving, if you would roll or bounce. She said, are you mad at me? I said, no, I saw a movie last night. The name of the movie was Bullet. And they kicked this guy out of the car doing 60 miles an hour, and he rolled. And I'm telling you, I rolled out of a car at about 45, and you bounced like a son of a bitch. You're all over the freaking place. You ain't doing this shit. You're bouncing, flying. And I said, no, I was, like, going to try it out on you. And she said to me, what's wrong with you? I said, nothing's wrong with me. I got a 7-step. You're still in the car. You know? Right? You're still in the car. So I think I'm getting better. And she said, well, why would you think of something like that? I said, shit, I don't know. I still don't know why some of the things that happened to me still happen. I said, I don't know, hon, but, you know, I'll tell you what. I said a little prayer, and you're here. And we're still in love, right? You know? Yeah, shit. I didn't want to give that up. Yeah, you know, I said, we're still in love, right? And she was like, ah. So here, I'm trying to be this person that I'm afraid of, the guy who will do the dishes and not brag about it. You know, I don't know about the rest of you men, but I was the type of guy, if I did the dishes or took the trash out or made the bed, I told every NA meeting I went to for the next 2 weeks. Now, my wife's doing that shit every day and not saying nothing. Let me do the wash and fold the clothes. Man, let me tell you what I'm doing today. How much I've grown. I did the wash. That's how crazy I was. That I thought that was important enough to brag about in a meeting. But I wasn't telling anybody that I felt insufficient with my wife. That in our relationship, the only way I thought I could satisfy her was sexually. So I tried to have sex every single night. Yeah, I asked her, look. I read something in a magazine once where you only have this many, and I started counting that shit, and I was like, well, I better start asking her every night. I'm nuts. Look, just because I've been clean so many years doesn't mean that that shit doesn't still come in here. And I'm here to tell you that we don't have to act out on that behavior. This is 16 years ago. I was 7 years clean, and I'm like, hon, like, you in the mood? She said to me, why do you ask me every night? I said, just in case. I didn't see that as any different. Are you holding? And she said to me, no one could possibly be in the mood every night. I said, well, my feeling is that that's the only way I make you feel good. And it was the first time I had ever told her the truth about how I felt about that. And we were married 2 years at the time. And she said, that's not what makes me feel good about our relationship. What makes me feel good about our relationship is that you care so much. And I was like, man, it's got to be more than that. You know, I'm all twisted up inside. It's got to be, you got to get a result, you know. Something has to, there has to be something, you know. So let me buy you some jewelry, I said to her. Because I wasn't satisfied with the answer. My sponsor said, go back and look at your 7-step work. Do yourself a favor. Go back and look at what you wrote on in your 7-step. You didn't pay attention. And I did. And I found out that that self-esteem that I talked about when I wrote on why I used and the defect becoming a shortcoming, if I didn't do something with that, the relationship was doomed. No matter how much I loved her and no matter how much she loved me, because I would have been obsessive and compulsive. Now, I'm not going to tell you I don't ask all the time. Now it's kind of like my little joke. You know, when you get to my age, it's just not happening. You know, and there's nights when I fake that stuff, like being in the mood, just to see. And now I'm in this relationship with this woman, and what was defective in my character is now an asset. I tell her how I feel. I can actually tell her that my feelings are hurt. Instead of my old reaction to my feelings being hurt was, I'll get you. See, I didn't have arguments. We had wars. Arguments were simply debates where you had a different opinion. No. I needed there to had to be a winner. Had to be a winner. At all costs, somebody had to win. And hopefully it was never her. I was a sick guy. I had to win something. You know. So I go back and I look at the stuff in my seventh step and I surrendered. It was the greatest experience of my life. I have had several spiritual awakenings. That was, to me, the one I remember the most because it was the most satisfying. I stopped fighting. I gave my disease its due. Did it a do. See ya. You're not helping me anymore. Those things that I thought were valuable when I first got clean are killing my relationships. And it allowed me, at that point, to surrender and do something I said I'd never do in treatment, which was do an eighth and ninth step. I don't know about the rest of you. I was in treatment. I seen that ninth step. Yeah, so, I will get high before I do that. There's way too many people. You know, they tell you, anybody you harm physically, spiritually, and mentally. Well, shit, that was everybody I came in contact with. I said to my sponsor, dude, do you know how many people I ran into in my lifetime? He said, write down the ones you remember. And the ones that you can't do that work with, that's what charity's called. Do something for someone who doesn't know why you're doing it. You know? And I was able to do that several times in the last 15 years. My father, God rest his soul, who at the time was dying of cancer, pulled me aside and he said, listen, I want you to help your brothers. I said, I don't think I can do that, Dad. I said, they got to want help. He said, yeah, but this is different. This is your family. You got to show them the way. Maybe they're not paying attention. You didn't. And I looked at him and I said, I'll do the best I can. He said, no, you'll do your best. They're your brothers. Well, they both got clean, and when my father died, he got 3 coins on his grave. My younger brother forgot what he was doing and relapsed 13 years later. Smoked so much crack cocaine that he ended up with tuberculosis because he burned a hole in his lung. That's what we do. And I go to visit him in the hospital with one of my sponsees because I want this guy. This is how shit really gets. Because he's not paying attention. We got to go in with the mask on. You know. And he's in there and he's sick. And he says to me, I love you, brother. Do me a favor. Go get my golf clubs. Now, the only reason I'm laughing at that is because 20 minutes before that, he was telling me how he was so sick. He couldn't get upstairs to the bathroom. He was taking a dump in his kitchen trash can. And he wants me to go to that house and get his golf clubs. I said, dude, you got no shot of me doing that, man. There hasn't been a door in your house in 2 weeks, and you ain't been there. I ain't going back to that house. They're lost. But I will tell you this. I'll help you get clean. I'll do anything I can to help you get clean. But I'm not going to go back to that house. It's a crack house. People are using in there. I'm smart enough to know after all this time, that ain't for me. You know, and it definitely ain't for you. He didn't pay attention. He ended up in jail. You know, they found him with $340,000 worth of OxyContin scripts. Oh, yeah, he wasn't messing around. In some sick way, I was kind of proud of the number. Because if it would have been some stupid number, I would have been ready to kill him. I'm an addict. You know. And now he's got 5 months clean. And he's working his ass off every single day to get a day. Calls me all the time. Bro, I felt like stealing today. But I didn't. I denied myself a lunch. You know, how many, we do that kind of stuff. I didn't steal to get a lunch. I said, man, I'm proud of you, man. If you need some money from me, he said, no, I'm going to do this. We come from the same family, so for him to humble himself to say no, I was proud of him for that. Once I was finished with my ninth step, the people who were alive, I really felt for me that for the first time in my life, I was living in the here and now, right here, right here, today. Everything's happening right now. So 10 and 11 and 12 for me were like easy, really easy. I didn't mind taking a look at myself on a daily basis. I just didn't like looking at that shit for 20 years. Today, I'm only sick today. Tomorrow's another start, you know. Getting to that point in my recovery was perfect because my daughter's coming along at this point. My wife gets pregnant, and they tell us there's going to be some problems after she's born because my daughter's diagnosed with a disease that 12 other kids in the world have. Doctor says she's got 6 months. And I remember the look in my wife's face when the guy said that, because this was her only child. I had three children from my first marriage. And I remember pulling the doctor's side and listen, dude, unless you spell your name G-O-D, don't give out any predictions. Just tell us that it's going to be a lot of hard work, because you just ruined her life. And you don't have the right or the power to do that. My daughter will be 10 in June. And the reason she'll be 10 in June is because he doesn't spell his name G-O-D. And I got to tell you, every year they have that party at the hospital, I make it a point to walk her by his door. Hey, go Doc. Look at how good she's doing. I'm an addict. I want that guy to know how fucking wrong he was. You know, I'm sorry. They say we eventually completely recover from this disease, and it's the day they bury us. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen for a while because I enjoy that visit. So my little girl, she's born, and man, she's sick. She's really sick. She's my girl, you know. There's no surrender in my daughter. She doesn't quit. The first 3 years she spent in the hospital. A lot of surgeries. A cancer that she had that they still don't know what it was and went away. I spent a lot of time in Children's Hospital Chapel. My biggest fear was that I would go to a meeting and my daughter would die. So I would ask the people I sponsored to come and bring a meeting to me because I couldn't not be there. I just couldn't do it. And my daughter teaches me more about what we're supposed to know than my sponsor and the guys I sponsor. Because my daughter loves everybody, everyone. She doesn't care if you're white or black, male or female, thin or fat, old or young. She doesn't care. All she wants is a partner to play with. And she has no real long-term memory stuff. So if you were an asshole today, she greets you the same way tomorrow she greeted you today. So who wouldn't like to wake up and forget yesterday's resentments? Right? How strong is that shit? How would you like to wake up tomorrow and forget all the people that you were angry with? Think about that. How powerful is that? That you wake up tomorrow and who you were mad at today is your best friend. That's how people are supposed to get treated when they walk through the door, regardless of their past and our relationship with that past. Yeah. I heard a guy share one time that Narcotics Anonymous doesn't have a revolving door for these people who relapse. And I told him to go fuck himself, because we have an open door. And I don't care how many times it takes you to get this shit. Who am I? I'm certainly not going to act like the doctor who told my child she had 6 months. What am I going to tell him? He's got no chance of getting clean here? No, that's not how we treat people here. And if it is, change it. People die from that message. Please don't do that. Please. Because if people did that, my brother would be dead. I wouldn't be here. And most of the other people in this room who relapsed wouldn't be here. And it's somewhere around 86% of us. So it would be a really short meeting and a small group of people. And they probably wouldn't like one another. You think? You know, small meetings suck. And, you know, with that in mind, like, service is a God-given gift. Martin Luther King says everybody has the ability for greatness because we all have the opportunity to serve. Now, you think about that statement. That was his purpose, just to serve. And every great person that we respect had that ability. To serve, not to be great, to serve. Take an H&I commitment, a prison commitment. Do something for your area other than attend your home group. Please. There should never be an H&I commitment not covered. If you got 16 H&I commitments in your area and 40 groups, how's that shit work? I don't get that, you know. It's too important, because some of those people in treatment centers and prisons might not ever get to an NA meeting. They might do life. And you're all they get each week. You are their vision of hope in a place where there's supposed to be none. Right? Just like they told us. That's why, you know, for the people who preceded us, they were under surveillance. Can you imagine that? That we would have to walk out of here like... That's what happened to those people. And they negotiated with the local police so that they could have their meetings. We need to thank them. You know, I was fortunate enough to meet Jimmy Kay in a convention in New York City in 1983. And I had, like, just purchased one of the first editions of the basic text at the time. And I was chasing him around to get him to sign it. I was like Babe Ruth of NA, right? I get a signature on that book. I got, like, a couple $1,000 in my hand. You know how I'm thinking? I get this guy to sign this book, I'm going to walk around thinking, dude, how much? Right? I'm an addict. finally, the guy succumbed after 30 hours of me just torturing him to give me his signature. He said, I'm just an addict. I said, yeah, but you're the first one, man. You're the first one. That shit means something. So he said to me, I'll sign it if you give it to somebody. And I was like, okay. Sure. To Jack from Jimmy, I told him to write, right? He wrote, please get another day and help somebody, Jimmy K. 3 months later, I gave it to a guy who now is 22 years. And every time I see him, I want it back. I never asked for it. You know, I'm hoping he figures out that's what that means. But and Jimmy shared that night about he was 19 months clean and he didn't fit in the fellowship he was attending. He was just a round peg for the square hole. And he left the meeting and he was going to kill himself. But first he was going to kill his whole family because he knew if he used what they were in for. And he went down to his basement and he sharpened his knife, his German bayonet, and he loaded up his gun. He was going to slice his two sons' throats, kill his daughter, his wife, and then do himself. But he wanted to do it when they were sleeping peacefully, and so he waited. And he went to sleep, and he had a dream. And he woke up and started Narcotics Anonymous. So if you give yourself 24 hours, you can do anything. Right? 24 hours. His family's alive. Narcotics Anonymous starts. That's some powerful shit. And it came to him in a dream. You know, and that's what we do. We dream here. And if our dream includes the four-letter word, help, which is service and commitment and humility, all rolled up into one. That's what that is. It's all rolled up into one. You can make yourself crazier, tell yourself you have 150 character defects. Man, thought of that still gives me like a headache. I had 7. There's only 7 deadly sins, they told me. Works for me. And off that list shoots everything else if you really do some work on it. Trust me, I have this knot on my finger because I wrote a lot. I needed to know because I never, ever wanted to feel like a newcomer physically again. Now, spiritually, I always feel new. I feel new every time I come to a meeting that I haven't seen people before. I get the chills. I got them right now. I think of my little girl who has more tolerance than I'll ever have. Somebody asked me what my greatest fear was. My greatest fear is that someday she'll find out she's different and not be happy. That's my greatest fear. That she'll see that her world isn't our world. And I told my sponsor, and he said her world's bigger. Because she loves. You know. I'm going to close with what Jimmy K closed in that meeting. And I never forgot it. Take a look at the addicts around you, please. It's important. Take a look at all the addicts in the room. Be proud of their strengths and have compassion for their weaknesses. I'm an addict. My name's Jack. Thanks for listening.